Happy Monday evening, everyone, and happy World Happiness Day. How about that? This is the second hour of the show. I unfortunately got cut off early in the first one, but we're full steam ahead on high octane, hitting all cylinders with my guest tonight, KJ Howe. I can't wait for you to hear all about her amazing life. Don't go away. Authors on the Air is getting ready to start right now. Your host, and you're listening to Authors on the Air. We're proud to be part of the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. I want to give a shout out tonight to Robert Gregory Brown, who not only is a very fine suspense and thriller novelist, he's a very talented musician. He created and plays our theme music. So thank you, Rob. You know, there are some moments that stand out in your mind and you think, I wonder how our paths will cross again when you meet some people. Long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. No, not really. When I first started this show, doing this show a long time ago, I had the opportunity to go to Thriller Fest in New York City. Now, for those of you who are not aware of this, Thriller Fest is the largest conference for readers and writers of mysteries, thrillers, and suspense. Anybody who's ever written a book in the genre is there. And herding cats probably is an easier job, but I met this amazing woman named KJ Howe, who is the executive director of Thriller Fest, which is the program put on by the International Thriller Writers. So fast forward, KJ and I have seen each other and have mutual friends, and we've run into each other at conferences, and everything is all well and good. And all of a sudden, a book lands on my desk called The Freedom Broker, a kidnap and ransom thriller, which is unlike anything I have ever read. It is so meticulously researched that I swear the author, KJ Howe, was herself the person involved in this book. I am beyond honored and thrilled to welcome to Authors on the Air for the first time fantastic thriller novelist and the executive director of Thriller Fest, KJ Howe. Welcome, KJ.
Oh, it's a real pleasure to be here, Pam, and I have such fond memories of our times together as well.
It is just amazing that it's come full circle where, you know, I was able to interview so many thriller novelists when I first went to Thriller Fest, and now we're back around to you, and it just seems natural. It seems like where it should be. So here's what I found out. I found out that when I die, I want to come back as you. I read your website over and over and over again, and I looked at every drop-down menu and searched through everything and looked at every picture, and you have the most fascinating life. Now, just to put things in perspective, listeners, KJ is, we are on the line, I'm in Florida, as you all know, but KJ is in Hawaii finishing up Left Coast Crime and probably spending some extra days there. If I know KJ, she's probably sitting on the beach. How was Left Coast Crime?
It was truly fantastic. What a great location to have it. When I heard it was in Hawaii, I knew I had to come. And I had some fabulous panels I was on. I was very lucky to be on the debut author. And it was really nice to be at a conference and not have to run it.
How about that? Because Lord knows it is a big conference that you run, probably the largest gathering of writers and readers ever, who interact very well together, by the way. I don't know if it's your oversight. I don't know if it's a writing community, which I suspect mostly it is, but also you've made it such a great conference. Thriller Fest feels so good to be there if you're not a writer. Thank you for that. That's really
important. Are you
kidding?
We love having you there. I mean, I feel that Thriller Fest is special because we call it summer camp for thriller writers. And when we say thriller writers, please know that it's super inclusive. We have people that write young adult thrillers, sci-fi thrillers, romantic suspense,
right,
anything that's really page-turning
right
fiction. So, like, come one, come all. You know, we're super friendly. There's no green room. So, you know, you'll talk to Lee Child and Steve Barry in the hallways, and they'll ask about your book or what you like to read. You know, it's really interactive and fun. And also there's a lot of learning opportunities.
Not only that, you have probably the best pitch fest that any conference ever puts on. The variety of people that you attract for agents and editors and publishers is amazing. I've never seen a pitch fest, and you know, I go to a lot of conferences, let's face it, but the Thriller Fest pitch fest itself is pretty impressive. There are representatives from all the houses there. Let's be serious. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. We're like basically have 60 different agents, editors, and producers now looking for, you know, the next bestseller. And that could be you
right
out there. So definitely come.
It could be.
We have a lot of success stories on the Thriller Fest website. So if you're interested in learning about how people have journeyed through the Pitch Fest and, you know, shot through the stars, feel free to visit thrillerfest.com.
And so you said something really interesting that caught my attention, and that is producers, because was it last year or the year before you started adding one of the panels was about screenwriting. Is that correct?
That's right. Mm-hmm. We're trying very much to explore the film world, you know, because there's a lot of crossover now between, you know, basically books and film. TV, you know, movies, everything. And with, you know, Netflix expanding their programs and other, you know, operations, we just really want to make sure there's that transference of information for people. And we've had some great success stories. So we're going to keep plugging away.
Well, Michael Conley, for one, who is, you know, usually the star at every Thriller Fest, and whose show Bosch is on Amazon Prime. If you haven't read Michael Conley, then you're just not reading. I want to go back to your bio and your website, which, by the way, is ahow.com, because there is a section called photos, and photos are from Austria, Budapest, Botswana, and Zimbabwe, the Czech Republic, then you have one called Island Time, which I love, Greece and Turkey, Jordan and Kenya. Are there more places that you've visited more countries, but you just haven't put all those photos up?
Definitely. It's just kind of hard to, you know, juggle everything right now. So I'm hoping to put up some more slideshows, and I'm really happy you enjoyed them.
Are you the photographer?
Yes, quite often. I really love taking pictures. For me, it's a huge, like, hobby. And especially when you're in Africa, you know, when you see all those beautiful animals on safari. And actually, one time I was in the Jeep on a safari, and there was an elephant who was very upset because the truck was too close to her young one. So she mock charged us. And I remember snapping photos, because at the time, of course, you don't know it's mock charge. So you just keep snapping photos and thinking, if this is my last moment, they're going to have some good pictures.
My God.
You know,
amazing.
As the elephant charged.
Tell us about you. Tell me about you.
Sure. Well, I mean, growing up, I lived internationally because my father worked in telecommunications. So it was really an interesting and eclectic, you know, upbringing. I'm born in Toronto, Canada, but, you know, basically just lived all over, like Africa and Kenya for 3 years, and Saudi Arabia for 5 years, and Austria and Switzerland and Puerto Rico. So it's been a really, I feel very much that travel is probably the best education you can ever receive from, you know, life, because you see how different cultures interact. You learn about different lands and different, you know, things. And I just feel when I was going to come to writing, that there was no doubt I would probably write an international thriller, given that I kind of consider myself a child of the world. So that's kind of right. Like, you know, that's what's beautiful about fiction, is that with every single author I've met, you know, at Thriller Fest and beyond, it's always their background that makes them into the writer that they are and motivates them to write the story that they tell. And that's why I think, you know, I gravitated very much to the international milieu, because it felt comfortable for me. And I wanted to write a series where, you know, I could go from one country to the next and have it be interesting and varied. And of course, I would have to go research that place.
Of course. Tell us about your schooling, your education,
sure.
Your formal education.
Sure. It was eclectic as well, because, of course, I went to different school systems. You know, for example, you know, when I was in Africa, I was in a British school system. And then, you know, when I was in Austria, I was actually in an American school. So it was really neat to have that, you know, different parts and switch all the time, because, you know, I was an avid student, thank goodness, because it was tough sometimes being the new kid all the time, because really I was switched out of school sometimes halfway through the year. But I feel like it, you know, teaches you great adaptation skills. And let's face it, in life, you know, crazy things that happens to us all, adaptation is key. And then I finally went back to Canada because I wanted to go to university there. And I attended the University of Toronto for 4 years and did a business degree. And then I was, you know, really keen on writing. I always knew I wanted to write, but I think it sometimes takes time to get there. You know, your parents tell you need to do something practical, right, that might pay the bills. So, but I never gave up on the dream. And I was a medical writer for many years. And really enjoyed that.
What does that mean?
Well, so what I,
it's
a great question. So basically, I created patient education pieces. So I would take technical medical information, okay, and simplify it so that it's really clear. And anyone, you know, going to the drugstore or, you know, pharmacy chains, things like that. I work for pharmaceutical companies, like, for example, you know, certain websites I wrote, or newsletters, calendars, all sorts of articles, pamphlets, all about, you know, different aspects of, you know, medicine, everything from health and fitness to heart attack. And I wrote a lot about diabetes, and that's part of the reason why I gave my character Thea Paris diabetes, because I felt like it was key to basically show that anyone out there with an illness, that you don't have to let it stop you from following your dreams or pursuing the career that you love. And I felt like diabetes is so incredibly prevalent in our world today. 29 million people in the U.S. have diabetes, and my grandfather had it. And so it was very personal to me, because I used to watch him, you know, inject himself with needles. And as a kid, you can imagine that made an indelible impression.
I'm sure it did. So, I remember my uncle had diabetes, and I watched him, you know, it was a teeny little needle, but still, it used to freak me out that he would do that. Yeah. So you're right. It does make it has an impact on you as a child when you watch something like that. I want to talk about your recreational life. You're an avid, you're gorgeous. Let's face it. You're tiny, you're beautiful, you're wonderful. You play tennis and you cycle and you swim. You're almost an Ironman athlete. And you still travel. You've ridden camels.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. I just love adventure. You know, I think we're all different, and it's wonderful that, you know, people pursue their passions, and travel and adventure are definitely some of mine. I love sports, and I love kind of pushing the limits a little bit. And so that's why I've been really lucky, you know, to have the opportunity to try different things. And I was in Jordan, and we stopped to tour Wadi Rum, which is a beautiful area. If anyone has a chance to travel to Jordan, it's incredible. And there was a bunch of Bedouin gentlemen who were training racing camels for an upcoming race. And so I said, hey, listen, can I try this? And they were so excited, you know, to see a Western woman willing to do this. And so I was able to ride the racing camel. So it was a lot of fun.
I know they have little saddles for them. I have seen them. But it can't be the most comfortable gallop or even walk. You know, the gait is kind of uneven, isn't it?
Oh, definitely. It's not like riding a horse, that's for sure. And they can be very ornery animals as well. You know, camels are quite, you know, like they have attitude. So, you know,
and they
definitely
spit,
don't
they?
Oh, that's right. Yeah, exactly. You don't want them to turn
well,
into
so
you, that's for sure.
That's so funny. I want to talk now about the Freedom Broker, your just exquisitely crafted book. You call this a kidnap and ransom thriller. I gather from everything I've read that there actually is an industry that addresses ransom and kidnap, in that it is a very real industry with very real people who specialize in this crime.
Yes, 100%. It's fascinating to me because very few people know about these operatives. So it's private industry. So just to back up a bit, there's over 40,000 reported kidnappings a year, and that's just the ones that are reported. And private industry created a position. Basically, it's called response consultant. Now, I didn't feel that was a very sexy title, so I chose Freedom Broker. And some of the, you know, response consultants who have heard the term love it. So, you know, maybe one day they'll call each other Freedom Brokers. And it's probably about, you know, around 25 to 30 individuals on Earth who do this job. And basically what they do is, oh, yeah, it's and I've interviewed several of them because I really believe, like, for the last 3 years, I basically immersed myself in the kidnapping world and interviewed former hostages, the kidnapped negotiators, reintegration experts, people who help, you know, hostages return to real life, KNR insurance executives, as well as the special forces soldiers who deliver ransoms and execute rescues. So that's what I've been doing. And these people are fascinating. So let's just give you a scenario. And that would be, let's say Coca-Cola. They have people posted all over the world, you know, and executives.
Right.
So let's say someone from Coca-Cola goes missing and is kidnapped. Well, their family member will probably call Coca-Cola and say, my father's gone. I don't know where he is. I think he's been taken. And so Coca-Cola will call their insurance company. And their insurance company will have one of these Freedom Brokers on speed dial. So the Freedom Broker basically has a to-go bag packed at all times. They grab their bag and they fly to wherever it is the kidnappings happen, spend the time with the hostage's family, interviewing them, you know, figuring out maybe what's happened, have they received a ransom call, and they basically walk the family through the whole process of bringing the hostage back home. And it's really been amazing and enlightening to see this world. Now, these people are very brave and capable because they have to go to these hotspots. Like, kidnapping isn't a huge problem, like, you know, places like Canada and Switzerland. We're talking about,
right,
you know, Latin America, like Venezuela, the Middle East,
sure,
you know, the Philippines.
Right.
They have a rampant problem with kidnapping. So they travel to the hotspots all over the globe and basically risk their own lives. They go undercover, basically as a marketing manager or an English teacher, something benign, and infiltrate the country. And they have to be very careful because places like Mexico, it's quite probable that the police are in on it.
Wow,
you know?
Really?
So they have to, yeah, oh, absolutely. Kidnapping has become a really difficult challenge for the international community because terrorists are filling their coffers via kidnapping, because it's a very quick, easy way of making cash. And displaced military and police in third world countries are also turning to kidnapping because they have no way to put food on the table, but they have wonderful security skills. And so it's a perfect fit for them. So
How did you hear about Freedom Brokers?
So I guess given my international upbringing, I always had this overarching threat of, you know, you're always the minority, you're in these foreign countries, you've got to be safety conscious. And so kidnapping has interested me greatly because I look at it as purgatory. you're alive, but you're not really living. You know, you're stuck in this vacuum, a place frozen in time, where, and then when you come back, you know, people expect you to be the same person you were, but you're not. So that fascinated me. So I decided to go to a kidnap and ransom conference, if you can believe it. They're very small, intimate ones. And I met some people there that really impressed me and influenced me. One of which is Peter Moore, who is the longest held hostage in Iraq, almost 1,000 days. And Peter and I have since become friends, and I'm honored to know him. And what he went through, he was taken with 4 British military gentlemen. And sadly, Peter's the only one who came back and survived. So I think, you know, just I immersed myself and then just kept wanting to learn more.
Wow, it's amazing. Let's talk about Thea Paris, because she is it unusual to have a kidnap and ransom operative be a woman?
That's a great question, and it's wonderful news for women, because there, it is unusual for sure. It was an old man's club, in an old boys' club, kind of so to speak, in the past, because most people who are freedom brokers come from an alphabet soup background, like MI6, FBI, because they have to be tactical, right? So at the same time, there's this amazing woman in England I had the pleasure of meeting, named Sue Williams, who is a freedom broker. And with kidnapping basically growing exponentially these days, what happened was they're looking for more freedom brokers. They need to train and hire them. And they've had a lot of success with female freedom brokers, because the women have a innate ability to have empathy with the hostage's family, and they're able to de-escalate often situations. You know, there's no macho one-upping. So it's interesting, because some of the companies are now searching for, you know, female freedom brokers with that in mind. And, you know, it depends on the country too, because like I lived in Saudi Arabia off and on for 5 years, and there was I talked to one of my freedom broker guys, and he was telling me how they had a female one there, negotiator. But because there's such a division between men and women in Saudi Arabia, happen was the female freedom broker was sitting in the kitchen waiting, okay, while the men discussed the situation. And then the one representative would come back into the kitchen, tell her what it was said, and then she'd have to talk to him, and he'd go back and talk to all the men. It was crazy.
Wow.
So,
I would imagine it's important for someone to have language skills that match that they have to be pretty quick on the uptake on language skills. What about when children are taken? You know, I'm horrified to read every time a child is taken out of this country into someplace in the Middle East because of a relationship gone bad, and that child's often taken by the father.
Mm-hmm.
Would these same people be ones I would turn to if that ever happened to me?
It's a great question. They do handle cases like that, but there are groups of people I've met, okay, who specialize in exactly what you're saying, child abduction. And that's domestic abduction, right? From like in the sense that, you know, like the father took the child. And it's such a complicated and fascinating arena, because there are laws in certain countries about extradition, and sometimes it's almost impossible to get the child back. And I think one day I would very much like to write a story where Thea Paris has to deal with a situation like that, so that I can really delve into that world and learn everything about it, because it's a fascinating dilemma, because, you know, like you said, it's a parental issue.
Yes.
You know, it's not like
Let's
a traditional
talk now.
Kidnapping.
I want to talk now. We're going to get into the meat and bones here and the Freedom Broker. But first, I want to let everybody know I'm talking to the absolutely magnificent KJ Howe. Her debut thriller is called The Freedom Broker. It's a fascinating, fascinating book, unlike anything I've ever read. And most of you know I read about 400 books a year, so I know what I'm talking about when I tell you that this is unlike anything I've ever read. I know that you will find it fascinating, too. If you'd like to say hello to KJ Howe, or if you have a question, please feel free to call in. Get ready to write it down. The number is 347-633-9609. First caller is going to get a book from me. You're going to get KJ Howe's new book called The Freedom Broker, which I hope is the beginning of a series. So 347-633-9609. Call in anytime. KJ, let's talk about The Freedom Broker, your novel. Where did Thea Paris come from?
Well, it's a great question because I really wanted to create an alpha female heroine. That was my goal. I love strong women. I think the world needs some, you know, and fiction, I mean, you know, like I feel like, you know, there's the James Bond, the Jason Bournes, and I'd love to see more female strong women that can do really cool things and yet still be feminine. So that was where I started from. But at the same time, I really wanted to explore, you know, this is not a spoiler at all, but in the story, you know, her brother is kidnapped. And 9 months later, he comes back, but he's forever changed. And I really wanted to explore the family dynamics of what can happen if one child is kidnapped. And Thea watched as her brother was taken. So she has a very strong sense of, in a twisted way, survivor's guilt, because she was actually the target, yet her brother was taken, and his life could have been hers. So I really wanted to explore that interesting family dynamic and how things changed when, you know, the brother came back home. And I wanted to give Thea Paris a really personal reason for wanting to be a freedom broker as well. I really feel that when you create a character that is motivated, you know, not by just a job, but about a calling, you can really ramp
Absolutely.
Up the tension, you know?
Absolutely. I agree with you. It's interesting you say that, because I think the best advocates are people who've lived through something very similar in their own life. So it just makes sense that your character would want to do this because she had a personal stake in it and she didn't want anybody else to suffer the way she did. So I love that premise, and it seems to hold very true in real life as well as in your story. Tell me a little bit more about her. I find it fascinating that you have on your website, under bio, you have your bio, but you also have one that you've completed for your main character, Thea Paris. Mm-hmm. And she's quite lovely. You have a photo of her. And what made you think to write out a bio for your character? It's an unusual thing. And I know a lot of authors do it to have like a character card that they use while they're writing. But what made you want to go ahead and tell people about your character?
Well, I think, you know, it's really important to feel like, you know, that person is genuinely real in a sense, you know, like, because, and I think by creating all her background and putting it out there for people to see, that it'll help answer any questions they might have about her, you know, what she's done. For example, you know, she speaks, you know, 7 languages, you know, she has been working with the DIA, which is the Defense Intelligence Agency.
Right.
You know, I wanted to show that, you know, she's the real deal and that she's worked towards this career for her whole life. And at the same time, you know, I really wanted to make sure that she was feminine and strong, just maybe a good role model for young girls to strive for, you know, that they should be sporty and that they should be active. And once again,
I'd love that.
You know, you know, like, right, don't you think we need more female strong role models
Absolutely.
Out there? And,
Absolutely. Well, you're certainly one.
Well, here you
did indeed put in her bio that she has type 1 diabetes. So since insulin isn't readily available in some of the hot spots she works in, she must prepare carefully for her travels. I love that you've done that. It's great. I mean, it's great. It immediately makes you want to know more about this story. It's a really great, first of all, from a marketing standpoint, and let's face it, you know, everybody has to market their product. And from a marketing standpoint, it's brilliant. But from a reader standpoint, I love it. I don't have to try to imagine what the character looks like because I'm too busy creating the movie once I open the book to read it. And, you know, I'm a very visual person. So the movie starts and I know who my character is. And I like that a lot. I like that very much, as a matter of fact. Kudos on doing that. Let's talk about the story. Tell us about it.
Sure. Okay, so basically, as I mentioned earlier, her brother was kidnapped when he was young. And so that motivated her to become a kidnapped negotiator. And, you know, she does the job, she does it well, she's successful, she's capable. But then she has the toughest case of her life during the Freedom Broker because she has a very special client. Someone has kidnapped her father. So it's like 20 years past, she goes full circle, and she's confronted with a family kidnapping, except for this time, she's not an innocent 8-year-old girl. You know, she's a very strong, capable, intelligent woman who specializes in kidnapping. And Thea and her team have to figure out who has her father, and the kidnapper is not sending ransom requests, but instead sends Latin texts. And so it's like this mystery within a thriller. I kind of look at the book that way.
Yes.
They're always, you know,
always
they're
the best
one. Did you feel that way too?
Yes. I love that because it shouldn't just kind of, you have to have layers to all of this. And there were so many layers. It was fascinating to me. And by the by, I want to tell you, you know who Thea reminds me of? Our mutual friend, Tori. Don't you think?
Yes. I so agree with you.
Isn't she just like the ideal person for that particular role?
I couldn't agree more.
So I'm going to have to tell her that. Or if you talk to her before I do, let her know that that's what we were discussing. But
no, I know, because Tori's like incredibly fit, strong. She's like literally a ninja, and she's smart,
she
and she's, you know, she's a dynamic woman.
Mind,
yes,
body,
definitely.
Spirit. She's just amazing,
mm-hmm.
Yes. For those of you who don't know, we're talking about Tori Eldridge, who has written a book called Empowered Living, and she also was a host in this network for a couple of years now, Empowered Living Radio. You can find it. Just go ahead and Google Empowered Living Radio. She writes a blog called Mindful Musing. She is a ninja, and then she studied ninjutsu. She's a master. She's amazing. So she's perfect for this particular role. If I didn't know what your character looked like, I would picture Tori through the whole thing, you know, because she's just that kind of a person. You just get it. Tell me about your writing process, KJ. When you're writing, you know, you kind of have the best library at your fingertips. In other words, you can go and speak to anybody about craft. You've lived craft. You hold a conference about craft. So you have all these experts at your the touch of a button. What is it like when you sit down to write a story? What is it that you do? What is your process like? You were obviously a meticulous researcher, but do you meticulously outline, or do you meticulously sit on the seat of your on your butt? And you sit in front of the laptop until something happens.
Yeah, well, you know, they say, are you a plotter or are you a pantser? And my response to that is pants on fire. I tend to, like, I know the character. I know the story I want to tell, you know, and I kind of know where I want to head. But I am not a plotter. Jeffrey Deaver does like 100-page outlines, and I have the deepest respect because he's such a talented writer, and I his books are brilliant.
That's amazing.
I just can't do that. You know, it's not. And I think that the key with writing is to know who you are, don't fight it, and go with it. And for me, I love what you said earlier about, you know, when you read, you're very visual, and it's like a movie.
Yes.
Sort of, I vacillate between two things. I feel like I'm like you too. I'm sitting there watching this movie unfold in my mind and trying to chronicle it on paper. And at the same time, sometimes I jump inside behind the character's eyes and with the point of view and basically tell the story from that person. So I kind of go back and forth that way. And I am very organic, and as I write, things just come out. You know, it's just like, oh yeah, that's what he said. And if I ever get stuck, I usually go back to two things. One is my research, because research can really propel a story if you learn something fascinating and you can integrate it. And the second thing is theme. I really focus on theme, and my book's themed very much on family, and they will be, you know, going moving forward. And so whenever I get stuck in the story, I'm thinking, okay, how do I solve this, you know, in a family way? Like, in the sense, because the more connected the characters are in your story, I think the more impact the story has.
Absolutely.
So I try to connect all the characters as much as possible so that it's, like, really, you know, intense. And so, you know, when I sit down to write, well, I've been extremely lucky, you know, to have have studied with David Morrell, Steve Barry, and Lee Child in different classes.
Hero.
Right?
Hero.
And so,
I love David
amazing.
Morrell with all my heart and soul. I mean,
so
he's just an amazing man, isn't he?
Well,
he really
is. I can't even tell you, like, he's a gentleman and a scholar, and I feel lucky to know him. The reason I wanted to write was because I read Brotherhood of the Rose by, you know, David.
Oh, my God, don't even tell me that. Do you know the story of the first – we talked about me being at Thriller Fest for the first time. Do you know I took my tattered copy of Brotherhood of the Rose, which is the reason I started reading thrillers and spy novels, is because of that book. And I asked John Land where David Morrell was, and he said, come on, I'll introduce you. And he walked over and he said, Professor, this is Pam Stack with Authors on the Air. And I was shaking, and I handed him my book, and John, cause the cover was taped together, and John Land teased me, and he said, oh, come on, we sell that book over in the book room. And I said, no, you don't understand. This has my blood, my sweat. I've read this book 20 times. And David, of course, is so generous. You know, to this day I call him the professor and he laughs. But I can't believe that you read that too. We are 6 degrees of separation for sure.
I know, it's beautiful,
right?
It's
amazing to me. It is a
beautiful
thing.
Well, to me, yeah, like he inspired me so much. I said to myself at that moment, you know, reading it, I said, if I can ever create a book that would make someone feel like they're escaping life and being immersed in the story, anything like David could do, it would be a dream come true. Like, and you want to hear something funny, because David, it's like David and I have kind of had an intertwined history. I decided, you know, I wanted to study creative writing. So I went to Seton Hill University and did a master's in creative writing. David came as a guest lecturer, and I got to meet my hero. And I was like, same way, I was like, oh, I can't believe I'm meeting David Morrell. And we had a lovely talk, because at that time I was writing my thesis, which was about a female sniper. And he remembered me. It was crazy. So then
he remembers everyone.
I know.
He's
brilliant.
Isn't he? He is. He really is. He's the kindest, most gentle, most brilliant man I think I've ever met in my life.
Yeah, I know. I feel so lucky to know him and to have had his guidance. So I went to volunteer at Thriller Fest, and then I had the chance to write a feature article on David, and it's on his website, because he had said to me, wow, it's a really in-depth article. Is there any chance I could use it on my website? And of course I said, no. Kidding. Of course I said, I'd be delighted if you did. And so, you know, he said, well, wow, I really appreciate you helping me. Is there anything I can do? And we've just, you know, developed a friendship, and it's really helped me greatly, because he is the one who pushed me to go a lot deeper on character and to really dig into my writing, you know, sense, and gave me a lot of great craft advice. And so, and a full circle was when I was on my book tour, I went to Santa Fe and spent the entire day with David and his lovely wife, Donna.
With David.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so for those of you who don't know, David Morrell is one of the founders of the International Thriller Writers Organization. He also is the creator of the Rambo character. So First Blood was the book that he wrote that sent him into the stratosphere. And he also has a PhD in creative writing. So he was a professor of creative writing, thus his nickname, the professor. But he also has an amazing love of Frank Sinatra. He loves music. He loves talking craft. He loves teaching students, and he is one of the kindest men I think I've ever met in my life. And I am so jealous that you got to spend time with him. But you know, I have him on this show at least 3 or 4 times a year because I love him so much.
Great.
You know, his
I'd love to get David and I together on the show sometime. That'd be a riot.
But you know what? Let's do that. Let's set up a show so you can interview David. How about that?
I'm in. That would be an absolute honor.
Okay. I'm sending him an email as soon as we finish this conversation, for sure.
Okay.
I want to also mention, you know, you were talking about you know, like Jeff Deaver, who'll be on soon. He's been on a couple times. He's coming on next month for his new book. But Alexandra Sokoloff also does a meticulous, copious outlining for her books too, as well as
mm-hmm.
research. I was very surprised to hear that. And, of course, David Morrell does a lot of outlining, too. But his is, I think, because of his he's so research-intensive, mm-hmm. especially after he did the historicals. So
oh, yes.
Tell me, when you're sitting down to write, are you, like, one of those people who can go to a coffee shop and write with all the cacophony, or do you want to sit in a quiet space, collect your thoughts? Do you just sit down and start typing? How does it work for you the best?
I prefer to be in a quiet space at home on a very comfortable couch, preferably outside in a deck chair, actually. But given I live in Canada, that's confined by weather. But I really like quiet and peace because I do think deeply about it. Now, I also have written scenes, you know, on planes and traveling, of course, because you kind of practically have to, you know, with life being so busy.
Sure.
But ideally, I would be in a very quiet place, very comfortable with my laptop, and just let it flow. You know, just let the imagination take over.
I think that's amazing. Do you ever listen to music when you're writing?
Rarely, but if I do, I prefer it not to have lyrics. Because I find
right.
that I'll start
overflow.
Singing and dancing.
Yeah. yeah. Oh, there you go.
Problem.
That too. Yeah. You don't want to. Do you read other people's books while you're in writing mode? I mean,
absolutely.
when you close mm. down your laptop, are you able to then go and read other thrillers?
Yes, 100%. I feel, and also I read a lot of nonfiction. I find it very interesting. I like to learn, and I like to be inspired, like, for future stories. So, yeah, 100%, no problem. You know, and I don't really feel like some people say, you know, it might influence their writing, but I don't know. Like, I just write the way I write. I don't think it could be influenced. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's just who I am and what I do. And yeah,
yes.
And
yes.
Exactly. And so, and I have, like, the deepest respect for so many writers. I'm really enjoying Greg Iles' books. I mean, you know,
yes.
his trilogy with Natchez Burning. Oh my gosh! Like
yes.
that man is
it's
a genius.
Amazing. I want him on this show so bad. Mm. You know,
and
tell me.
Good. I was going to say I loved Andy Gross's The One Man. I thought that was a brilliant, brilliant.
I know. And you're going to be signing mm-hmm. with him. Tell everybody when you're signing and where, please. Just tell them now, so we can get that out there.
No worries. It's on March 30th in Delray at Murder on the Beach. And I'm really excited to be in conversation with Andy because he's a longtime friend and such a nice guy and really intelligent. And I can't wait to have a good time.
Amazing. This book is so amazing. I think this is his masterpiece. And he's a darn fine writer, but I think this is his masterpiece. I really do.
I agree with you.
Paul Levine interviewed Andy for the show, and they talked about that book. It is an exceptional reading experience. It's something so different than anything Andy has ever done. So Andrew Gross, he's amazing. So I want to talk a little bit more about writing because I don't want anyone to get the impression that you got ahead because of being the executive director of Thrillerfest. Because the fact of the matter is, you have to have some talent for writing. You have to have the discipline for writing. You have to have a unique idea. And you have to sit down and do the work. And so those things are really, really important. What else am I missing, KJ, when we talk about what makes you a successful writer?
There's a couple of things I would touch on. The first one is to be magnificently passionate about the topic you're writing about. Publishers really enjoy series now because it works really well. If someone finds you in book four, they can read your backlist. And so
right.
if you're going to choose something, be wildly passionate about it. I'm so passionate about Thea Paris kidnapping that I could write like 50 books. I have so many ideas, you know, about what she could do and where she could
wow.
go. So that's one thing I would highly recommend, you know, to really take your time and pick the right thing. And even if you don't know about it, learn about it, you know, whatever just really you feel excited about, because it's a lot of long hours, lonely hours sitting, you know, writing your books. And so you want to make sure you pick the right topic and you're not going to, you know, just go, oh, I'm tired of this. I don't want to write this anymore. And the second thing is to warmly embrace criticism from constructive sources. And what I mean by that is, you know, it's a journey writing. I'm hoping that, you know, every book moving forward, that I'm going to improve my writing. And
yes.
I'm sure that like any of us, you look back and you go, I'd love to change this, this, and this, because it's a long and winding road with craft and also storytelling ability. And you just keep honing and honing. And sometimes the writing is so incredibly close to you and so personal that you can't stand back as you need to be. So try to
right.
find people that are critical, that you trust, that are kind too. I mean, you don't need, you know, to be, you know, harshly
you
criticized.
You don't need the hammer. Right.
You need a glove,
but not a hammer. Right.
Yeah, exactly. And someone that's going to guide your writing career and help you hone your skills so that each book is that much better. So those two things, I think, being passionate and also embracing criticism. I've met a lot of writers who, you know, who are a little bit resistant to people's suggestions. And I understand it's a really fine line, because you have to have a backbone to know that if someone tells you something and doesn't feel right, that it's still your story, you need to stick to it. But if several people tell you that something is off,
the same thing.
You really do need to
right,
listen.
Right.
You know?
Right. Well, that makes sense to me. That makes sense. And you're right. A lot of people will not embrace any type of critique, and critique can be good or bad. And you're right. You do have to grow from each and every story. So let's talk. You said, I think I could write 50 books about Thea Paris. But in fact, do you want to write 50 books about Thea Paris? Or do you have, I know that she's your series character. How far ahead have you mapped out stories for her?
Well, I'm 5 books, but I mean, you know, I guess we'll see how it goes, right? It's one of those things where I would love to write lots of stories about Thea, because I'm just enthralled with the kidnapping world and I see endless potential. At the same time, I have a lot of other ideas for books, so I'm willing to write them as well. I think it's just a matter, the only limiting thing is time. Sadly, we never have enough time.
Well, this is true. You said you have ideas for other books. Does that mean that you are going to consider moving out of thrillers, or you'd like to try another genre, or do you have other ideas for thriller novels right now?
Well, I certainly would be open to writing outside the thriller genre. I'd love to write like a big family saga, or, you know, something with a lot of drama in it. I'm trying to, you know, keep focused right now on the kidnapping thriller
sure.
series, because when you're building something,
there's so
I think
much.
It's really important, you know, to keep building.
Yeah.
If people enjoy the characters and the type of book you're writing, you want to stay in that. But I certainly am very open to different genres, for sure. I think sometimes, you know, like if you're on vacation and you're walking along the beach, you'll see something happen and think, wouldn't that be a really good story? You know?
Yes. Well, I've been told that you writers are the biggest snoops. You see something and you turn it completely around into something it isn't, or you overhear a conversation and say, wonder what that's all about. I tell you why I'm fascinated by this particular thing, this particular idea of writing outside of just one subgenre, let's say, because fiction is fiction, nonfiction is nonfiction. But, you know, I think back to the year that Brenda Novak was the Silver Bullet Award winner. And, mm-hmm. you know, Brenda writes some beautiful women's fiction. She writes some romance. She writes other things. But, or like J.D. Robb, you know, Lenora, who writes in a couple different genres, and certainly no one's tired of hearing from her. I kind of like the idea of, and I think women stretch more than men. At least that's been my experience. I may be wrong, but I think women are less fearful of trying new genres, except for noir writers who tell me they sometimes want to do horror or they sometimes want to do science fiction, which is fascinating to me. I love all the genres, except for horror I can't read. It scares me too bad.
Yes.
I'm a wuss.
Well, you know, it's interesting.
I get nightmares from that stuff.
Well, yeah, I get it. I mean, I think we all have our taste too, right? You kind of can't like fight who you are and what you love. But,
yes.
You know, when I was studying at a retreat, one of the agents that was critiquing the work told me that I have a slight literary bent to my writing and that she could see me doing a story in that kind of realm. And so, you know, I'd be open to anything, really. I just love storytelling so much. And, you know, I feel really grateful for the opportunity to have, you know, the stories on paper and out in print now.
So let's talk about storytelling. Where does that creative gene come from in your family?
Wow, it's a good question. I guess, you know, growing up, I would say that maybe my father was more of a storyteller. He loved to, you know, sit back, and he's a very adventurous man. And so he's always doing, you know, like, for example, he taught me how to scuba dive. And, you know, one of the things I had to do to prove that I was ready was to go to 120 feet below the surface inside a wreck and buddy breathe with him. So, you know, basically you pass the regulator from one mouth to another, right, in case you run out of air. And
right,
you know,
okay.
He's that kind of guy. And and then we get up to the surface, and, you know, he would be like, okay, let's, you know, talk about this, and very much a storyteller, you know, tell people about what it all is, adventures.
How neat. How really great. Do you have siblings by any chance?
Yeah, I have two brothers, one older and one younger.
Are your siblings creative?
Not as much, actually. They're very talented in their own right, you know, but it's not their thing. I think, you know, each child kind of has their own, you know, strengths and weaknesses, and it's really important to pursue what you really love, you know.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so I would say that my younger brother's absolutely car crazy and has kind of worked in that realm for his life, and my older brother is actually quite technical. You know, he's got that strength.
How neat. Right.
So,
which
so
I don't
I
have
guess,
any of, so I understand that.
Heck me either. Are you kidding? Like, thank goodness for the words, right?
Right?
So,
thank God for Google. What can I tell you?
Exactly. And, you know, the thing is, right, is that you kind of can't change who you are. You know, we're born a certain way, and then we're nurtured.
Yes.
And so I just think, you know, we all, it's just like, you know, all three of us traveled internationally, but I think out of the three of us, it was myself who enjoyed it the most.
Interesting.
You know, so
interesting.
It's interesting, isn't it? Mm-hmm.
It is. You've been around a lot of fiction writers in your life, a lot of them, the best of the best. What is the role of fiction in our society, KJ?
I would say it's a couple of things. It's cathartic because sometimes reality is harsh, but when we talk about things in story form with fiction, we can process the emotions that are involved with our, you know, the nonfiction things that happen. I think it's our way of escaping too. Sometimes, you know, when life is too harsh, we can dive into a book and just lose ourselves in it. And I love that. I think storytelling, I mean, it's incredibly important to me. I've been told stories. I've told stories, you know, and I'm hoping that, you know, to just keep learning more and more about storytelling, because going back to caveman days, right? It was the way we communicated. It's the way we expressed ourselves.
Yes. Yes. It's absolutely true. I'm convinced that your name will be on everyone's lips soon enough as a storyteller. I really am. Your work is spectacular. I love to do final five quick questions, five quick answers. Are you game to play?
Always. Hey, listen, I'm ready to dive right in.
Okay, good. So let's think here. What haven't I asked for a long time? I don't know. I kind of have to think of things. Are you a cat person or a dog person?
More dog.
Okay. I like you anyway. It's okay.
I'm sorry.
I love all animals. Are you kidding
me? Hey, listen,
me?
You read my book, right? You read my book and you saw Aegis, my Rhodesian Ridgeback, in the story, right? So.
Yes. Well, you have to go look at my timeline and see George, because Colin Campbell wrote a book about 3 days with George. George is a 140-pound Newfie, a big Newfoundland, and he is the sweetest dog ever. So I'm an animal lover anyway, so that's good. My next question to you is, I know that you've sat in and taught classes on craft, on writing, on process, and everything else. You really are kind of a walking encyclopedia. So let me ask you this. What's the most important tool in any writer's toolbox, be it physical, mental, emotional, inspirational, whatever it happens to be? What do you rely on every time you sit down to write?
I would say dialogue. Dialogue in the sense that you need to have an ear for it. You need to be able to put it down there, because dialogue drives the story. And, you know, narration is a very different aspect. I think dialogue is key, and you've got to be able to – I actually have a term. I call myself a dialogue assassin, because I go in after writing my first draft, and I take out every single word of dialogue that's not necessary and make it as tight as I can.
Lean and mean. Jeffrey Deaver calls it an economy of words, and he's absolutely right. Dialogue stops a reader more often than anything else, I believe. And I have this conversation with a lot of writers, and I'm going to have it with you too, because you're an expert. But don't you think that many writers mistake dialogue as just words that are being spoken, when they're so different? The words that are spoken between men and women and different characters of different educational levels and intellect and whatever their relationship to the main character is must not be the same. Do you agree or disagree?
100%. I think that if you read your character's dialogue and then read another character's dialogue, people should be able to tell who that character is. You know, distinguish between them.
Right.
Without being told. No tags, nothing. It should be like,
because
it should
the timbre in everything is so different, isn't it? The cadence of words, that even the words themselves are critical. I agree with you. Dialogue is very important. It's just particularly why I love Pat Conroy's writing so much, because the dialogue is so exceptional. It's just so sweet and so. It just rolls off your tongue. I've read his book many times and read it out loud, because it's so different hearing it versus reading it. So speaking of, is there a book that you, or books, that are your go-to books that you read more than once? Everybody, I mean, most people have one or two that they will admit to reading more than once. Do you have one like that?
Definitely David Morrell's, of course, because of his influence, but also Lisa Gardner's The Perfect Husband.
Oh, yeah.
Lisa's first book, I mean, there's something magical about that book. She's such a talented author. I love every book she writes. But there's something that just really resonated with me about The Perfect Husband. I think it's just she worked on it and rewrote it, and it is just incredible. And the layers and depth of that story really resonated, and I don't get tired of it. No, I think it's fantastic.
Oh, good for you. I'm so glad. If you were not a writer, if you know, in an alternate universe, you could choose any other profession, what would you choose?
I'd love to be a talk show host because I love interviewing people.
Oh, good.
You
so
know?
I can make that happen for you. We'll talk about that. You can be a talk show host. I do this all the time. We'll talk about that. Very good. I like that.
Well, just
so,
but you know, I love when you know you can talk to people and learn things. Like that's why I really enjoy research because I genuinely love talking to all my kidnap experts, former hostages, everyone you know around that, and learning. I don't want to learn. I guess that'd be a great way to learn, right? If you keep interviewing people.
Yeah, it's an interesting profession, I will tell you that. It's never boring. But thank you for saying that. That's lovely. Tell me something on your bucket list.
Well, I'd sure love to climb Mount Kilimanjaro. Africa is extremely close to my heart. I live there. I've been back several times. You know, I actually write about it a lot. And I think it would be really fun to climb that, you know, and just look around and feel that incredible feeling that we're just such small creatures on Earth, you know, and that
you have Africa at a cellular level, don't you? Africa at a it is, you know, the place of all beginnings. So I understand that. I'm going to ask you a bonus question. And so here's
okay,
my bonus
lucky me.
Question. What would we be surprised to learn about you, KJ Howe?
Oh, wow. But in some ways, at the heart of it, I'm actually pretty shy, a bit introverted. But because of the fact that I've had to be the new kid in school and always adapt and then, you know, running Thriller Fest, I'm shy when I meet new people and I just want to make sure that it goes well.
Well, I'll tell you what, you were absolutely stellar as my guest tonight, and I'm so honored. We have taken way more time than I told you we would, but it's just been an honor and a delight speaking to you. And I'll tell you what, I'm going to send David an email and ask him if he'll come on the show so that you can interview him.
You're making all my dreams come true today.
Oh,
I get to
good. I'm glad. You know,
and interview David.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Thank you so very much for taking so much time from your busy schedule. You are one, I know, wickedly busy lady, and it has meant a great deal to me to have you here. Thank you so much, KJ. And you and I are going to talk again real soon, I promise, because I'm going to get you on the air with David.
Well, thanks, and I should be the one thanking you. I really appreciate the time today and great questions, and really nice to catch up with you again.
Thanks, and we will talk again soon. Thank you so much for being with me. Have a great night, okay?
Okay.
Good night.
Thanks a million.
Sure thing. Tomorrow night, I'm going to be speaking to Luke Roman, who is an Aussie writer. Well, it's our 9 o'clock tomorrow night show. It'll be his Wednesday morning show. So make sure you stay with me. Go out and get KJ Howe's book. Oh, my God, she's just amazing. Thank you for being with me, everyone. And thank you, Mom and Dad. Good night.